Good morning. This is Darrell Gunter, your host of Leadership on WSOU 89.5 FM and streaming on the net at WSOU.net. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have back after a few years, my dear friend, Walter Fields, who we used to both live in South Orange, Maplewood, but now we have both moved to different places. And Walter, welcome back to the program.
Oh, it's good to be back. It's good to see your face, man. Look, no matter where we live, we're always going to be connected.
Absolutely. You know, I'm always so proud of the work that you've done in the past, especially, you know, in South Orange, Maplewood with the school district. And now that you have moved down to Maryland, you have established a nice bigger footprint there along education. So if you can share with our audience a little bit about your background, and then we're going to jump into your new roles and responsibilities that you have with the Prince George's County Board of Education.
Well, you know, I'm trained as a political scientist. I have two graduate degrees, one in public policy and one in political science. I have really devoted a lot of years to these issues of education equity because I just believe that education is a cornerstone issue in our democracy. So while I lived in New Jersey, I served as political director of the New Jersey NAACP for a number of years. I was vice president for an organization that I don't believe exists anymore. It was the New Jersey Public Policy Research Institute, which was a Black public policy think tank. So I served as vice president for programs for that organization. And then locally in Maplewood, I created a Black Parents Workshop, an organization that ultimately filed a federal lawsuit against the school district there on equity issues. And we entered into a settlement agreement that is still being complied with by the school district. Relocated
well, that was huge, man, because all of this leveling where they leveled us out of the those honor courses and everything. So yeah.
Absolutely. And it, you know, it still exists today across the country. And I really, you know, decided to relocate to Maryland many years ago, because I went to undergraduate college, Morgan State University, in Baltimore, Maryland. I always considered Maryland to be sort of my second home state. Mm-hmm. And one of my mentors and former professors, Dr. Alvin Thornton, is one of the most foremost education equity advocates, not only in Maryland, but across the country. Maryland school finance law is named after Alvin Thornton.
Wow.
And so through the years, he and I, you know, have kept in contact. And Maryland 2 years ago passed an unbelievable 10-year education equity plan called the Blueprint for Maryland's Future. And so knowing that this work was underway and knowing that my wife and I, we have a daughter who was graduating college. So we felt that it would be a good time to move, and we wanted to be closer to her. She was in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. Shorter drive from the DC area to Pittsburgh than from New Jersey. So that was a good thing.
That's a 6-hour drive. I've done that.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, moving to Maryland, I wasn't moving into a state or a county, Prince George's County, that I was not unfamiliar with. I lived in Prince George's County for several years after I graduated from college, and had always kept in close contact with a lot of people in Maryland. So when I came back, I sort of just stepped into the work again that I was doing in New Jersey. So one of the first things that happened, I was asked to be the co-chair of an organization called Strong Schools Maryland, which is a statewide education equity organization that was really the foremost advocacy organization that was pushing the Blueprint for Maryland's Future through the Maryland legislature. Then I connected with Morgan State University because I felt that the work that I had done in South Orange, Maplewood, mm-hmm. could be applied nationally. And I have helped Morgan State create what's called the National Center for the Elimination of Educational Disparities, NCE. Mm-hmm. So it is a national research center that we've established. I serve as one of the directors of that research center and on their advisory board. Mm-hmm. And then just recently, the county executive of Prince George's County, which is a very large county of almost 1 million people, For those that don't know Maryland, it sits on one side of Washington, D.C. Montgomery County sits on the other side. Prince George's County School District is one of the 25 largest in the country. $2.7 billion budget, 136,000 students, 200 schools, 20,000 employees. So it is a very big organization. Wow. The county executive, Angela Alsobrooks, appointed me to the school board to fill a vacancy. And so that has become a major part of my work here now. So for me, the focus has been and will be for the foreseeable future, because I don't really talk about retirement. I don't think you can retire from this type of work. I think they just kind of put you out the pasture one day. You know, there's no gold watch at the end of this sort of work, right? This is mission oriented work.
Exactly.
And I really consider myself fortunate and blessed to be able to do this type of work. You know, when I was a college student, I really didn't think about a career. And I remember when recruiters would come to Morgan's campus and I would never go. I would never go to any of the recruitment events because I felt I wasn't there to get a job. I felt that I had a certain skill set that I wanted to develop. And that skill set would allow me to do the things that were important to me. And so I never approached education, still don't, in a sense of this degree will help me obtain this job.
Right.
I think what it has helped me do is help me to have a lifestyle where I can be of service.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's most important to me. You know, we all have, you know, we're very fortunate. You know, we're of a generation in the African-American community that benefited significantly from the prior generation, the civil rights generation. We caught the tailwinds of the civil rights generation. But we are in a position right now to do some incredible things and to do some incredible things for our children so that they can be in a position to create the type of society that we may not live to see come into an existence, but we can know that when it is our time to leave this earth, that work is progressing towards that goal. And that's what gets me excited every day.
Well, you know, I have always admired and deeply, and I admire and deeply respect you and the work that you have done, because a lot of folks don't understand the situation that we had in South Orange and how they were just holding our children back, our Black children back, because of this leveling and the number of hours and days that you sacrifice to do that. I mean, I want people to know, just if it wasn't for you, that lawsuit would not have happened and it would not have been settled.
Well, you know, here's the thing, and I'm very honest about this. It started from a very selfish point of view because my daughter was impacted. So, you know, when my daughter was in eighth grade, they tried to put her into a remedial math class for ninth grade, despite the fact that she had an A in math, despite the fact that she, you know, was advanced proficient in all statewide mathematics assessments. They were going to put her into a lower level math course. And, you know, my wife and I were livid. And it took the ACLU and the UCLA Civil Rights Project to first come in and to advocate on behalf of our daughter. And so once we got her situation settled, I really began to think about, this can't be just about my daughter.
Right.
This has got to be a systemic problem.
Yes.
And the more I worked and uncovered, the data was just so horrible around the treatment of Black students and their academic journey. And that's when I decided we have to have an organization of Black parents. Like, we have to stand united, because if it happened to my child, I know it's happening to other Black children in the district. And so I think part of the lesson, you know, from South Orange Maplewood, because we really worked hard with the school district, and we even worked hard with the local police department. I mean, we had a horrible incident with our local police that we had to get involved with.
Yes.
Right. And I tell people all the time that there's no magic to this. There's just commitment. And, you know, you have to be willing. It does take a lot of time and it takes a lot of hours. And you have to be willing to be disappointed because it doesn't always go your way all the time. You're going to hit bumps in the road. But I think if you are consistent, and that's the one thing that we proved to the school district, that we weren't going away. I think there was a belief by the school district that we would never take them to court. And I told them, I said, we don't want to take you to court, but if that's our only recourse, we will. Right. And when we filed that lawsuit, even when we filed the lawsuit, I think there was this attitude that we can wait them out. And then when I publicly announced that I was moving to Maryland, I thought that, they thought this was over. Right. Because I was deposed and I had to travel back to New Jersey. And so I sat through a 7.5 hour deposition over 2 days. Because I was just determined, like, if I have to drive 5 hours to sit for this deposition, I'll be there. And I think once we proved that we had not only the facts aligned, that we had all the data, that it became inevitable that they would have to settle this or face some serious financial consequences. And it was never about money for us. It was just about the principle of, we live in these two towns. We pay exorbitant taxes. like exorbitant taxes. So we want to make sure that our kids get the best education possible. And when I tell people in Maryland that I was paying $20,000 a year in property taxes, their eyes fall out of their head. They're like, what?
What?
I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And I wasn't paying the most in property taxes. Right? Hey,
we were paying north of that, you know. But I can tell you, when Bailey graduated, Deb and I were in the tennis court. Deb is like, okay, we got the education.
When it's time to go. Absolutely. And the sad part about that is that the two towns are very beautiful towns.
Yeah.
You know, if you would drive through South Orange or Maplewood, you didn't live there, you would say, oh, wow, I really would like to live here. It's beautiful. The homes are beautiful. But, you know, you have to also have a real community.
Yeah.
And a real community supports all children.
Right.
Black children were not being supported.
Right.
And so for me, it was bittersweet leaving Maplewood, having lived in a home for 22 years.
Oh, yeah.
Having raised my daughter in that house.
Oh, yeah.
You know, my daughter was an athlete. And so, you know, her athletic career tied to that high school in two sports. But you begin to realize that at some point in time, a community has to have the will to change.
Yeah.
Right. You can only do so much. And so, while I'm still involved with the Black Parents Workshop, I'm still on their advisory board. My brother James Davis is now the chair. You know, I'm hoping that the school board there does the right thing by Black children. It's time.
It's time.
This has been too long. And we've lost a lot of good people. I think a lot of Black families who took their children out of the school district, who might have moved out of the two communities, what those two towns lost in that value is tragic, right? And so, you know, I think that wherever I go, I will be involved. I really had not intended to get involved in anything in Maplewood when I moved there. You know, having served as political director of the New Jersey NAACP, I was just looking for a quiet place to live.
Right.
And when I first moved there, some people reached out to me and I said, nah, I'm not getting involved in anything. I just want to. But, you know, sometimes someone has other plans.
Well, you know, since we're both Godfather aficionados, they pulled you back in.
Exactly. Every time I try, they pull. But it's true. Like, you sit there and you see what's unfolding in this community. And you start to scratch your head, like, how can this be that on the surface you have a community that brags about diversity and inclusion.
Right.
But then when you look at how Black and brown children are being treated, you're like, what is wrong with this picture?
Right.
And it just rubs you the wrong way. And then the overlay, of course, as I said, it's, you know, what you're paying in taxes.
That's right.
And I just said, you know, I can't pay this tax bill and contribute to what's going on to Black children.
Yeah, it's like by not doing it, it's like you're participating in absentia, but they have your funds from the taxes, you know.
Exactly. They're like the IRS. They're going to get their money.
Right. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. Well, this is excellent. Ladies and gentlemen, we are here with Mr. Walter Fields, and he's the principal of public affairs. His company, which is a public PR company that focuses on politics and education
and public policy and all the stuff that no one wants to really get involved with, but it's the work that we have to do if we want a better society.
So let's talk about what you're doing with the Prince George's County Board of Education. You're appointed to that role. How much time do you have to fill out that term? And you know, I got to ask the question, are you going to run for a re-election?
No, first of all, I'm not going to run. I told the county executive when she appointed me, I'll give you 2 years.
Okay.
Because they're going to be two very critical years as the state implements this education equity master plan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is a job in a school district that is very big. It's a job that could really be a full-time job. It's a big school district with a lot of moving parts. In fact, today I had an onboarding session on internal audit. It truly is a corporation when you have, you know, a $2.79 billion budget and you're responsible for 20,000 employees. You're the largest employer in the county. And in our county sits the University of Maryland College Park, the flagship university, the state of Maryland. We have more employees than University of Maryland College Park.
Wow.
For our county school district. And when you think about the responsibility for the assets that you have, the 200 school buildings that you have, right? And 136,000 students. So this is a position that requires a significant amount of time and attention. Mm-hmm. And so beyond attending our regular school board meetings during the week, I might have three or four additional meetings, committee meetings, special meetings, executive session meetings. So like when I accepted this, I realized that it was going to be all consuming. But I figured for 2 years, I could devote that time and really play a role in shaping how we educate children in this county. We have an incredible CEO for our school district, Dr. Monica Goldson, mm-hmm. who is really a dynamic leader. And I think that, you know, we, like so many jurisdictions across the country, were impacted by COVID. So we've seen some issues of student performance coming out of COVID, which was a very difficult period for young people. So we have that challenge of closing that gap, that COVID gap.
Mm-hmm.
We have the challenge of addressing students' mental health, because that was the other big hit during COVID, how young people's mental health was significantly affected by the isolation that COVID caused, right? They're not in the classroom, they're home, they're sitting in front of a screen, trying to, you know, attend class. And so we're now coming out of that. So there's a lot of repair work that we have to do.
Yeah.
But we have the resources to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because beyond our $2.7 billion budget, we have this massive influx of funds from the state because of this blueprint for Maryland's future, right? Which, and so now I'm excited because I think we, in short order, within the next 2 years, will be able to turn the corner and really help our students. We live in a very dynamic county. Black students represent about 55% of the school district population. Latino students represent about 36%, which is a big change. When I lived in Prince George's County in the mid-1980s, I lived in Landover, Maryland.
Right,
which is where the Washington football team plays. That's where their stadium is located, and where the Washington basketball team used to play before their arena was taken down. They now play in the district. But when I lived in Prince George's County, Prince George's County was a predominantly white county. And over the last 40 years, there has been this transformation. So we have a dynamic young Black woman who is our county executive, our county state's attorney, which is a county prosecutor or district attorney, is a young Black woman. Mm-hmm. Our school board CEO is a young Black woman. In Maryland, in another 14 days, we will celebrate the inauguration of the state's first Black governor, Wes Moore. And we have now a Black state attorney general. So in all these key positions, African Americans have ascended. And so it's an exciting time to be in Maryland, because it's an opportunity for the African American community to really take the reins.
Yes.
And we have the tools to be able to address a lot of the issues that have been troubling for us.
Allow me to ask this question. What you have just said in regards to the number of African Americans who are in these key positions, what is the one key feature or one key characteristic of our folks that folks are saying, I trust him, I trust her for this role? What would you say that characteristic is?
Well, I think it varies. So when Wes Moore was elected governor overwhelmingly here in Maryland, I think Wes projected a confidence of leadership that people looked at him. Wes was formerly the CEO of the Robin Hood Foundation in New York City. He's a Maryland native, though. He's a former Rhodes Scholar. I think
he's a military man, too, if I remember.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so I think for Wes, it was about leadership. But I think in general, I think there's a sense in the African-American community here in Maryland that it's our time, that we're a Southern state that has had a pretty challenging history. But now, given the talent pool that we have in Maryland, that we have to be more assertive. Mm-hmm. Like, we can no longer sit on the sidelines. We can no longer acquiesce. That many of these positions that in the past we might have surrendered, we might have had to surrender them because we didn't have the numbers politically. I think there's a sense that if we don't move now, we may never have this opportunity again.
Mm.
And so when you look at Maryland, a state where the Black population is about 38%.
Mm-hmm.
Like Maryland, you know, I joke with people here all the time to say, you know, I thought I was moving back to Prince George's County, mm-hmm. and I didn't realize I was in Wakanda, because, you know, all you see is Black leadership. Right. It's like it's an amazing, and for me, it's an amazing thing when I think about driving through Prince George's County at age 19 and 20, when it was mostly farmland. Like, this is a beautiful county that has a lot of land. Maryland as a state has a lot of open land. Right. And so there are less people in the state of Maryland than there are in the state of New Jersey, but probably three times as much land in Maryland.
Nice.
Right?
Nice.
And so you're beginning to see all this development take place. You know, we moved to a brand new development. Like, this place used to be a brickyard manufacturing.
Okay.
And so, but now it's a development of like 600 or 700 new homes.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that all over Maryland. And so it's a state that's growing. It's a state where the demographics are changing. You know, in the 1980s when I lived here, the Hispanic population was probably less than 5%.
Mm-hmm.
now you're up into like the 20th percentile mark, which is an incredible change, but it's a beautiful thing when you are out in public and you see the diversity of the population. And we have a large African immigrant population. A lot of it has to do with the fact that in this county, you have a lot of federal government installations. The, you know, the Goddard Space Flight Center is here. It's a five minutes from my house where they track every manned flight in the country.
My sister works there. Yep.
Oh, right. And so you've got Goddard. We live 2 miles from a Department of Agricultural Research Center that is 17,000 acres of open land. Right. And so, you know, you have all these federal government agencies. The Census Bureau is in Prince George's County. Mm-hmm. Prince George's County is bidding for the new FBI headquarters.
Okay.
You know, and so you have all of that, and then you have University of Maryland, huge campus, right? You have Bowie State University, historically Black college. So the count is a very dynamic county. And so I think people here are excited by the idea that we're going through this transformation. And I think Wes Moore in being elected governor has set the right tone, because he made sure that people understood that education was a priority.
Right.
Like for Maryland to move forward, our children have to move forward.
Right.
And so those of us who are in, you know, the education world are really excited about it, because it's the one area that governors tend to shy away from, because they feel as though there are some political costs.
Right.
Wow. But I think if you see someone that steps out and says, no,
like, it's an investment.
This is an investment. It's foundational to our state's future that we have a very effective and quality public education system.
Right.
And so there's a lot of excitement right now in Maryland. And, you know, for me, it's kind of interesting, because having grown up in New Jersey, you know, and lived here once and now back, and then I've got Virginia across the river, that I've looked at that state and some of the craziness that goes on.
Right.
And then to be right outside the doorstep of the nation's capital.
Right.
It just gives you an interesting worldview.
Yep.
Of what this country, because we've got urban here, we've got suburban here, we've got rural here. And so I get to see it all.
Nice. Believe it or not, we are just about out of time. And we got 2 minutes left, and I wanted to get your view on what's going on in the House of Representatives right now.
The chickens are coming home to roost. I always say that you can't practice the politics of hate and division and not think that it's going to come back to haunt you. And what the Republican Party has right now is a mess on its hands, because no matter who is elected speaker, that person is going to be significantly compromised. And this is a party that has perfected campaigning, but they are poor in governing. And we're seeing this on display right now. And so, you know, for anyone who might have been a critic of Nancy Pelosi, here's the difference. Nancy Pelosi would have never stepped into that chamber.
She counts
not for knowing if she didn't have the vote.
Right.
Would have never done that.
Right.
And so now, you know, as we speak, I think we're on the sixth or seventh ballot for a speaker. Hasn't happened in 100 years.
Right.
Right. Right. And so hopefully this is a wake-up call to the Republican Party. Like, moderate your tone, actually be about the business of trying to move America in a better direction, and stop allowing this hatefulness to drive your agenda.
That's right. Well, Walter, we're going to have you back on the program to talk about the developments and also to keep track of the great stuff that you're doing there. Ladies and gentlemen, we are here with Mr. Walter Fields. He's the principal of public affairs of Fields Communications, and it's about education, it's about politics, it's about policy. He's the person that you need to have on your team. Walter, thank you for coming on the program.
Great to see you, my friend.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, that wraps it up for this weekend on Leadership with Darrell W. Gunter on WSOU 89.5 FM and streaming on the net at WSOU.net. And we want to wish you to have a great weekend. But remember, leadership begins with you.